Welcome to Cattle HQ, a podcast from industry experts and progressive producers discussing cutting-edge info about the cow-calf sector to keep cattlemen and women in the know and positively affect their bottom line.
Welcome to Cattle HQ, brought to you by South Dakota State University Extension. I am Robin Salverson, a cow-calf field specialist living the life in Lemon, South Dakota. I am joined by my coworker, Taylor Grusing. She's a cow-calf field specialist at the Mitchell Regional Extension Center, and her name may be pretty familiar to all of you here in the state of South Dakota. She used to be with SDSU Extension, but also her family ranches by Chamberlain, so I'm excited to have you on this episode with us. And we're going to be talking about calving, and I have to admit, calving is my favorite time of the year. Some of you are in the middle of the hustle and bustle of calving, while others of you are anxiously awaiting to start. So with that, I'm going to ask some Taylor some questions, and we're just going to kind of have a conversation back and forth about this upcoming calving season. So we will, you know, kind of get into that calving process and what to look for. But before we do that, for the folks that have not started calving yet, is there time to improve the cow's colostrum quality? And why is that important?
Yeah, so thanks for inviting us to do this podcast today, Robin. I think, like you said, some people are already started and others aren't. And so the weather has been up and down as well. And so there's lots of things to talk about. But as your question just was to talk about, what we can do to improve colostrum quality. So the cows are going to start making colostrum about 6 weeks before calving. And so there's some things we can do to help improve that. One thing to start out with is their nutrition. And so body condition and nutrition kind of go hand in hand. And we can monitor cow's body condition score in that last trimester in order to set them up to have a good calving experience as well as good colostrum quality. Another thing you could do would be to give some supplements to help that as well. So they might be called scour shots by some or whatever. And what that's really is going to do is to try to build that IgG or the antibody quantity in the colostrum. And so the higher the quantity in the colostrum, the more that calf will receive when it first nurses from its dam. And of course, there's a lot of variability in, if we need those or not. But some things you could also look at too would be, like I said, that nutrition of the cow, but also the parity of the cow. And so, you know, heifers maybe are going to be ones that might need that extra boost of antibodies to make their colostrum better. Maybe third, fourth, fifth calving cows, they might not need that. So those are just some things that we want to look at to improve the quality, because that's the first passive transfer of immunity that those calves get. And so calves that fail to get that are usually set back in life right away, as well as later on into their growth as well. So colostrum is extremely important.
And even with what you just shared, IgGs are transferred through the colostrum, and we can help build that through nutrition. But there's also things like some of the vitamins. You know, we think about placental right. transfer. Not everything is transferred through the placental, or very minimal transferred through the placenta,
right.
such as vitamin A. And the very, you know, their calves basically are born devoid or very little vitamin A in their system, mm-hmm. and they get a lot of it through the colostrum that they intake right after birth. And so that's also really important to understand. Not everything, like you said, you mentioned there's that transfer through the colostrum, and there is some, transfer through the placenta, but not everything transfers through the placental to the uterus. From the placenta to the calf. In utero.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And the, like I said, the colostrum starts being made 6 weeks before, and then it stops immediately at parturition. And so that first milk that they're getting is what we would call that colostrum, right? Mm-hmm. That we're talking about. And that's only there in, the first drinks those calf is getting. So within the first 24 hours, that's all the colostrum that calf is going to receive. And then after that, it gets replaced by, the regular milk of that cow. So if there's for some reason, like a dystocia, like we're going to talk about later, and they can't get that first thing of colostrum from their dam, then we need to provide that either in another way, through milking out the cow or through some sort of a supplement.
So let's get into that a little bit further in regards to the colostrum source. Okay. So we obviously have the dam's colostrum, which is probably the very best, right? As long as she was nutritionally fed properly to make sure that that colostrum quality is good, right? But then we also have the option of getting colostrum replacers or the things that you can go buy from your local store. Tell us a little bit about those and what should you consider when looking at those?
Yeah, so there's a lot of colostrum replacers available, but there's also colostrum supplements. And so the main difference between those is the quantity of the IgG antibodies in those. And so, for example, a replacer is going to be that complete replacement of the colostrum. These would hopefully have at least 200 grams of IgGs in them. And so this, like I said, would be the complete replacement. If you don't think that calf got anything to nurse, or you know it didn't because it was a dystocia that it hasn't had the opportunity to nurse yet. And then the supplement, for example, is usually going to be about half of that. So it might be only close to 100 grams of IgG. How this compares to the dam's colostrum is 1 quart of beef colostrum from a beef cow has about 95 grams of IgG in it. And that's from a healthy cow and a body condition score of 5. So just on average. So what we usually recommend calves get, excuse me, is 2 quarts of colostrum within the first 2 to 4 hours of birth. And so if we're looking at a cow's colostrum and she's getting, 2 quarts of that, she's going to be getting close to that 200 grams of IgG. Or if we're giving a supplement, mixing that into 2 quarts of water, excuse me, a replacer. If we're giving a replacer, we're mixing that into 2 quarts of water, make the same thing that the calf, the dam.
Excellent. That's really good information because I think it's so important to understand, like you said, the difference between a colostrum replacer versus a supplement, because they are different, but also the amount that they should be receiving of IgGs and how soon they should be receiving that after birth. And explain why we don't have 48 hours to get colostrum into a calf system. What changes in that calf?
So that calf's gut or the body that it's going to be putting that milk into absorbs nutrients at an intensified rate during the first 12 hours to 24 hours of birth. And so with that, the milk is going what we call into this esophageal groove, which kind of directly puts it into the abomasum of the stomach, which is kind of like the absorption center, right? And so after 12 hours, that groove starts closing. And so it doesn't mean that it's not going to get anything from that colostrum that's received later. It's just not going to be as intensively absorbed. And so the sooner the better. Obviously, we don't need to separate that calf from the dam right away. We want to let it have that opportunity to nurse itself. But if it's struggling by any means, trying to get that in within 2 to 4 hours will increase your chances of absorption a little bit better.
So one last question about colostrum, and we'll kind of keep moving through the questions that we have here. Is it all right if an individual maybe has a dairy nearby to get colostrum, for instance, from a dairy? Because they pull those calves off immediately. They get the colostrum. They might have colostrum available, and or let's say a neighbor that just had a cow calf and he had frozen some colostrum. And is that an acceptable replacement?
So there the kind of sequence of events is obviously if you can get it from the dam, that's first and foremost. Second, a herd mate colostrum could be acceptable. And within the herd is going to be the safest just for disease reasons. But if you did have some other sources, that'd be a conversation with your veterinarian to say, can I accept these things or is there any kind of testing I need to do just to make sure I don't introduce anything new to my herd? If it is from a dairy, they are a little bit less concentrated in antibodies than beef. And so they have a higher volume, but less, antibodies in there. So the volume you might need to supply might be a little bit more, but some is better than nothing, I usually think. And then your third option would be those commercial products. And so kind of that sequence of events. But yeah, definitely an option to receive it from somebody as long as you're comfortable with their herd practices and biosecurity.
Biosecurity is huge. You can start something you don't want to start
Right.
if you're not
Yes.
careful. So
Yep.
awesome. We might come back to classroom in this episode. You never know. It might come back into the
Yep.
conversation because it is such an important part of the calving process in
Right. Yep. And
reality.
like you said, that's kind of what kicks off as the cow is starting to bag up, right? Like you're seeing her milk develop, like that's colostrum being developed. And then obviously once she calves, it'll be there, it's ready to go.
So, kind of going as I'm going to ask the question about, you mentioned body condition score and how that is really related to nutrition. But why, along with the colostrum development, but why also is body condition score important at calving? What does that tell us about future expectations of that cow, I guess?
Right. So not only does body condition score help a cow be in good shape, essentially, going into calving, right? She needs energy. She needs to have those nutrient reserves, not only to, have the calf, but then also maintain her maintenance requirements and the lactation requirements after calving. But in addition to that, immediately after calving, that clock kind of starts ticking in order to rebreed that cow. We only have so many days in order to keep her on a 365-day calving interval. So if cows go into calving season in a good body condition, they're more likely to rebreed on time, we would say, or kind of stay in that interval. So our body condition targets or at calving for cows would be at least a 5. So on a 1 to 9 scale, 5's kind of right in the middle. Five and a half can be even better, right? Just depending on where you live and what kind of genetics you have as well. Heifers, I would target to be in a body condition score of 6 to go into the calving season. And so again, that helps them with calving, but it really helps them rebreed better. Because it's really hard to make up body condition score after calving, because a lot of that nutrition that you're providing them is now going into lactation. They're going to feed that calf before they feed their reproductive system, essentially. And so it's going to, they're kind of going to come back into cyclicity faster if they're in adequate condition, and then hopefully be ready to breed at the right time when we look at that.
And keep that 365-day calving interval because that should be everybody's goal, is to have a calf on the ground every 365 days.
Days. Yeah. So if you want to add body condition score, the best time to do it is pre-calving. Obviously mid-gestation when they don't have any lactation requirements, just right after weaning, like you have said that weaning is another critical time. But that last period of gestation, if you want to add body condition score, then that's going to be a good time to do it. Of course, they're going to be pumping some nutrition into that, fetal development, but they will be also putting on weight at that time as well.
You mentioned that heifers should be at a 6 because they're still growing.
Right.
Usually they're at about 85% of their mature body weight at calving. So that makes a lot of sense that we want them at a higher body condition score, along with lactation, growing and lactating. And then hopefully, like you said, getting rebred and having a calf in utero again. But I think also it's important, you mentioned, yearlings have a body condition score of 6, but even those first calf heifers, just because that is a challenging time for those heifer, or excuse me, for that age, to get rebred back. So even maybe you alluded to being at a 5 to 5.5, or even a little more for those young cows.
Right. Yeah, 'cause I think, each condition score is about 100 pounds, I guess, is kind of just easy math of what you could do. So, if you want to add a condition score, let's say 100 pounds, and you have 2 months to do that, that's not even 2 pounds a day to add, and with some good nutrition and feed, you can do that pretty easy. And the younger cows are growing, lactating for the first time, maybe even the second time. But we've visited with producers that maybe they breed their heifers before their cows because they allow them a little bit extra time to come back into cyclicity after calving before they join maybe that cow herd breeding time. And so it gives them more time that way. But if you aren't interested in doing that, maybe you want to calve everything at the same time. Just kind of having those heifers, like you said, at 85% of mature body weight or even 90, maybe will help them resume a little bit faster.
Absolutely. So I'm really kind of excited to get into this ne next topic of calving, and that's really looking at the different stages of calving. And so I just want you to kind of dive into that and share with our listeners what are those stages? What should we be looking for? What are some of those critical things that people need to consider when it comes to those different calving stages? Even though for folks that have been calving for a long time, there's different things to think about.
Right. So there's technically three stages of calving that we want to watch progress as a cow begins parturition or a heifer begins parturition. And so that first step is what kind of the classic signs of, you might say, pacing or restlessness, right? So this is kind of how that cow separates herself from the herd as you're doing chores or, driving past. And this cow is wandering into the corner of the pasture by herself. She's trying to isolate herself, kind of, starts pacing. Maybe she's lays down, maybe she gets up, then she lays down again, right? So that's kind of the internal process that's happening, or excuse me, external process that's happening internally. Those uterine contractions are starting, okay? And so they're gonna start basically bringing that calf or that fetus up into that birth canal, and it's gonna start pressing on that cervix. And we need the cervix to dilate in order for obviously calving to occur, right? And this process might take 2 hours, it might take 8 hours. It's just kind of when you start seeing it happen, and maybe when you see that cow running off to the corner by herself and she's not at the feed bunk, that's kind of when you need to start your clock in terms of, okay, I need to keep an eye on her, because throughout all of these calving stages, we want to see progress. And so whether that's, okay, she's been pacing now for a couple hours, we'll give her another hour if it's a heifer. If it's a cow, they might progress pretty fast. And so that might be an indication that something isn't going quite right. But the end of stage one is when that cervix is going to be fully dilated, and you're going to have appearance of that first water bag and allow that to rupture. And then you're going to be progressing into stage two. So stage two is what we would have as the classic, like this cow is calving, right? So this is the delivery process. Uterine and abdominal contractions will work together now at this point. And so externally, you will see her having those contractions, again, bringing that fetus up into the birth canal, hopefully in a presentation that's adequate for that cow to deliver the calf. So normal presentation would be feet first, with head between the feet, and then the body coming after that. And so as that head and feet progress, that cervix is hopefully fully dilated at this point, and so be able to travel through the cervix and the birth canal. That second water bag has broken or will break, right as you're kind of getting to see that. And so this stage moves a little bit faster normally. So we like to see progress every 30 minutes. And so saw that second water bag break. Maybe we see toes. We look to see if they're coming the right way. Like I said, head and feet. So toes up in the air, dew claws down would be your good sign. If you see it the opposite way, then you need to maybe intervene. But every 30 minutes, we should have some progress. So whether that's nose and then it's head and then it's body, right? So keeping that progress moving, hopefully be can done within 2 hours from water bag to, calf on the ground is the completion of stage two. And then stage three, might not necessarily be something we normally think about observing, but this is the delivery of that placenta. So we want that to happen within 12 hours after delivery of the calf. And this can be happen right away. But anything more than 12 hours is what we would consider a retained placenta, and that would be where you want to visit with your veterinarian to discuss your options of either monitoring it or having some kind of an intervention just to make sure that gets completely delivered, because we don't want any kind of infection occurring. But those are the three stages, and they can take anywhere from 2 hours to 24 hours, depending. We want to make sure the continued progress is what we monitor.
So you mentioned some of those different, times. We want to make sure to see progress in stage two about every 30 minutes. But is there some, kind of critical times we should think about intervening, when it comes to calving problems? Obviously, you mentioned having proper position of the calf,
Right.
and if you notice that maybe they're coming backwards, their breech. Maybe you notice that there's a lag back, even though they're coming forward. What are some of those kind of key things to think about when it comes to intervention and when to do that?
Right. Yeah. So, like you said, presentation is probably the easiest one, right? So, it's not always the size of the calf that's the issue. Sometimes we think, oh, Desocia is just too big; she can't have it. But it's really that presentation. And so, if a leg is back, let's say, so yeah, you see a nose and one leg, definitely something you're going to want to go in and do, right? Because the cervix and the pelvis, obviously the cervix within that pelvis is only so big. And so we have to, hopefully get that calf coming through in the right direction. And if a leg is back, that shoulder area is going to be way too big in order to pass through that. If they're backwards, that's going to be probably, more of an emergency to get in there. Because as that calf normally progresses through the birth canal, it's getting its oxygen from the
Umbilical cord.
umbilical cord. There you go. So it's going to get that through that. And so it's not going to be essentially disconnected or severed, right, until it's kind of fully developed, or excuse me, fully delivered, but it has its face out of the cow, right? So it's able to physically take that next breath. If a calf is coming backwards, whether you help with assistance or not, that umbilical cord is going to be cut off as the head is still in the cow. And so, speed of that is a little bit more important. But no matter what, when you are going to assist, making sure you assess those presentations before you get in a hurry, and then working with those cows can be some things to look at. And like you said, when should you intervene? If heifers, just really aren't making any progress, sometimes we can go in there and manually assist with the dilation of that cervix. If the calf is maybe normal size, but she's a small heifer, we can try to do that. There's lots of supplies and stuff we can use for just lubrication and a little bit of force there to work with that cow in order to help get that calf out. Because once that calving's calf is in that pelvis in the birth canal, it's obviously stressful, right? It's getting contracted, right? And so we don't want to induce any more acidosis, would be something that could happen with that calf just from that stress, right? And so we can help not necessarily too early, as once we see the stages happening. We just have to make sure we assess and give the cow a little bit of time in order to make sure she's at least dilated and got that calf in the right position before we can assess anything else.
So, always have your veterinarian on speed dial, I think is a good thing during calving season in case you need to use them. I hope you never have to, but there's times where,
Right.
especially those calves coming backwards, like you said, that's a really critical thing because
Time is of the essence a
time is
little
of the
bit, yeah.
essence. Yep. And so making sure you have a good relationship with your vet in case they need to be called upon for help. So
And I had a vet recently tell us that, you FaceTime your family all the time, like FaceTime me, right? Like they don't always have to come. I mean, they're willing to come, right? But they don't have to physically be there all the time to see everything. So it's never too early to probably make the call to your vet either, right? Say, hey, I'm getting this cow in. I think I'm going to need your help. They're happy to turn back around, probably, if you get it right. But one of them just said, "Well, just FaceTime me. Like, show me what's going on, right? Like, show me where you're at, and I can probably give you a little bit of idea of my opinion, of how fast you need to go, or what else you could do." So don't be afraid to use technology in the calving barn.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So how can calving dystocia affect that newborn calf?
Yeah, so obviously, like I said, it's stressful. And so, as that calf is maybe struggling to get through the birth canal, or the cow has just been calving for a long time, if they have any kind of stress, or the dystocia is technically just a stressful event, it might affect their vigor of what we kind of use as a blanket term of their health and activity, right? How active they are. And so normally we would expect calves to be, shaking their head, right? Kind of after birth, right? They're trying to sit up and do those type of things. And then possibly, attempting to stand within 30 minutes even. Those are kind of, just progress, right? And so anytime we have dystocia, that calf vigor score is likely going to be decreased. And so some things that can affect the calf, it's going to be slower to stand. Its thermal regulation might be a little bit as interrupted as well. So we expect them to be shivering, but it's going to probably have a little bit harder time maintaining body temperature from some of those struggles. It might be struggling to stand up as fast as well. And so trying to keep an eye on them, like I said, to still have progress. So whether it's 30 minutes to standing, maybe it's an hour to, give it an hour to stand, put it in the warming box to help it warm up, and then see how it will do after those type of things.
And kind of coming back to colostrum again, too,
Yep.
making sure that they have the ability to take that colostrum in as soon as they're able to. And if they've been stressed, that's probably a little bit harder.
Yep.
So
Yep.
how about the cow? How does dystocia affect the cow?
So we kind of already talked a little bit about that rebreeding interval, right? We want her to rebreed fast. And so if there's any kind of trauma, to, that event, maybe, just pulling and stretching, right? So we have to let that uterus involute in order. We have to have that done correctly in order for them to, A, have another calf, but B, they have to resume cyclicity. So if there is some kind of a dystocia, maybe it's not even something you helped with, but maybe it was just a big calf, that bigger calf than she's normally had. We might see some effect of, delay to breeding on those. Again, nutrition's going to help, them come out of that a little bit, but just something to keep an eye on of, maybe there's, when cows start riding, keep an eye on those cows that did have some kind of a dystocia to say, okay, I at least saw her cycle one time before the breeding season. So, could affect some cyclicity, but I think sometimes, cows are more resilient than we give them credit
Definitely.
for. So if it's a weather event, or just an odd like presentation, that's not necessarily her fault, right? But so if we can try to safely correct those, hopefully they'll be able to get back on the breeding track.
Yep, absolutely. So once that, if you had to assist a cow, and once that calf is safely on the ground, and what is the best way to stimulate that breathing? And how should you have that calf positioned to best help that calf?
Yeah, so the recovery position is one that, if you did assist, try to set it sternal with front legs forward, back legs forward. So chest or sternum on the ground. And so this is going to open up the lungs or the breathing, to the largest position, right? And so it's going to hopefully keep their head a little bit balanced as well as they try to come to and lift their head. But sitting them sternal will help open up their chest floor, allow their lungs to expand fully. You can also check for, heart rate and things at this time if you want to. But then kind of doing some rub down or stimulate that breathing, tickling the side of its nose. You might see people put straw up their
That's what I
nose,
do.
right? Yeah. And so rubbing them down, like making them feel good, right? Just kind of giving them, their first pat on the back a little bit to be like,
Yep.
hey, you're here. like get this going.
Yep. I've seen people hold their calves upside down or hold the calves by the back legs with their heads facing down. I've heard different things like that's good and that's bad. Can you maybe share a little bit more about that? Instead of you said you want to put the proper position is to put that calf's sternum on the ground with its front legs forward and its back legs forward. But I've also seen people don't do that. And like I said, they grab the back legs, hang them upside down, basically. What are your thoughts on that when it comes to they're thinking they're stimulating and getting, releasing that fluid from lungs or anything like that. What are your thoughts on that?
So I've heard more probably negative things about that in just recent history. Like you said, people have done it in the past, and what they have found is that the fluid that's coming isn't actually coming from, their lungs. It's not getting that stuff out of there. It's coming from their stomach, I guess. And so try to avoid that at all costs. If you need to move the calf around, try to not drag it by its hind legs, right? Kind of move it together with somebody. And none of us really want to be swung upside down either.
No.
So I don't know where the common thought of that was being totally good for him, but they say not to do that anymore. I guess
Absolutely.
just keep them on the ground, keep them sternal. That calf's gonna tuck its legs under itself eventually
Yep.
when it goes to a normal sitting position. But the keeping them sternal and letting that cow work on that calf to get it stimulated is better than letting it hang around.
Absolutely. So, I'm going to ask you a question that always seems to be brought up at a lot of producer meetings or when we talk to producers, and that is about trying to reduce that birth weight by limiting their protein prior to calving. And so they start kind of, restricting that protein intake prior to calving to help reduce that calf weight. Is that really true? What does research show on that?
So when we said we want them in good body condition score, let's say you're trying to make up for that, right? So it's last gestation, last trimester, we're trying to add some weight. Like I said, some of that will be going into the fetus, but we also live in the upper Midwest, right? So it's cold, and sometimes it's really cold, right? And so what research has found is that it's more temperature dependent than probably feedstuff dependent. Yes, we need a balanced nutrition of protein and energy being provided to those cows. And the heavier birth weights isn't necessarily indicative of a heavier conditioned cow. Okay. So they, when it's cold, we feed those cows more naturally. We got to keep the rumen pumping, we got to keep her fed. And they are housing their energy internally, right? And so we're just like essentially creating an oven, right? And so we feed her more, it's warmer in the cow, and she's gonna be producing a larger calf or growing a bigger calf at that because she's transferring her heat internally to stay warm. Versus in a fall calving situation, when it's hot outside, we're more likely to have those lighter birth weights because we're dissipating heat away from the cow at that point. And so it's pretty environmentally dependent. But I think in general, we just have bigger birth weights up in this part of the world, right? And they might not be too big. You got to decide what's big enough for your operation. But it's not necessarily directly correlated to higher feed intake, higher birth weight. Not necessarily the case.
Necessarily the case. That's kind of a myth buster out there, folks, because I think we have a tendency to think that. And Taylor did a really great job of explaining why that's not the case when it comes to additional feed causes bigger calves. That's not necessarily true. So,
And we can see a little bit of size growth, like you said, with more protein. But the capability of that cow to have the calf makes more of a difference. So a thin cow isn't going to be able to have a tiny calf any easier than a big cow is going to be able to have a big calf, if that makes sense.
absolutely. And we also have to think about calf vigor. You said that calf vigor is huge, it's a really important part of this whole equation. And if we're limiting nutrients both to the cow, and we're also limiting nutrients to that calf. To me, not a win-win situation when it comes to that. So
Some folks might know the term of like weak calf syndrome,
yes.
for example, right? Not necessarily always coming from a thin cow, right? So how does that happen, right? It's, failure of passive transfer usually, usually more of a nutrition issue versus, having poor colostrum, for example. That would be more of the effect of that versus, so underfeeding your cows isn't going to save you the heartache, and overfeeding your cows is going to hopefully produce healthier calves, like you said, that have more vigor.
Absolutely. So I mentioned, well, I guess I didn't mention this, but Taylor's been putting on calving workshops here, and I want her to share a little bit more about those. So Taylor, take it away. Tell us about those calving workshops and what you're doing with those.
So we've kicked off a couple of calving workshops so far this winter season, with the help of some partners across the state, that have these large cow simulators that we can simulate the calving process essentially. And so there's a full-size cow and a full-size calf model that we work with students or people who sign up to learn how to properly deliver a calf. And so, of course, we talk all about the normal stages of labor, like we just did in this talk, and then kind of get into, what could go wrong, right? But we want to know, let you know how to do it right, in a less low stress situation. And so, we provide the opportunity for students to pull the calf, putting the chains on correctly. Working, whether it's with a head back or a leg back too, we kind of give them those opportunities. Watch that calf, fully be delivered from the cow, and then practice, like you said, the calf processing, with full recovery, sitting them sternally, as well as some other calf processing things that we do. So they've been kind of fun. They're a work in progress, and so we're going to continue to hopefully offer those around the state. And we have a model of our own coming soon, so we're excited to be able to bring those farther away, wherever people want them.
I'm really excited about this cow model. Yeah, I think it'll be a great addition to our programming and for folks in our that we help serve to better prepare themselves as they move through their calving.
It's been kind of fun too to also some experienced producers there as beginning producers. We've had students, we've had interns, we've had hires, but then, like I said, very experienced people who've come, and they just said, "I can always learn something new," right?
Exactly.
And they've also been really good mentors to people in the class too, because they can chat about what they've done and what worked and what didn't work or what they see. And so they've been really fun. So if keep a lookout on our extension website for more of those coming, hopefully in the near future.
Awesome. Well, I know at some point in time I'm going to attend one of those also, because, like you said, you're never too old to learn something new.
Right. Right. Yep.
So before we end this episode, excuse me, of Cattle HQ, do you have any last minute thoughts or comments to share with our listeners?
I think the main thing to remember is if you do have some calving issues this year, is call your vet whenever you have that good relationship with them. Don't just call them when it's bad. Make a plan beforehand, because they're going to be on your team, or call your neighbor, whoever you're going to call, right? Just have someone on your team to be able to help you through it or talk through it if that happens. Heifers are more likely to need assistance than cows. So if you have a pile of heifers to calve, observation of those is going to be key in order to kind of starting that clock to know when progress is happening. Cows kind of take care of themselves, I usually think, but when you have those backwards ones, those that they're still going to need some assistance. So practice kind of makes perfect, right? Make sure you have your facilities ready, your equipment ready, and then the phone numbers to call for help when you need it.
And I think we didn't really talk about equipment, but with your pulling chains or whatever using to assist a pull, cleanliness is also really important. So when you're done pulling that calf, just don't leave it out in the wherever you may pull your pen or pull your calves, whether it's by the chute or maybe you have a separate area where you assist with births, then you just throw those chains out there and use them again the next time. I think it's really important to consider the whole, cleaning them up, taking care of your equipment so that the next time you use it, it's clean.
And one other thing too, of if you're doing any vaccines or anything like the colostrum or the bottles, make sure at least on the vaccines that you're opening something new in the colostrums just to make start it off fresh. Everything has expiration dates. We don't know what's got into it in the past year, but those are some things that can, you're giving them for a reason, and they can be most effective if they're used at the right time.
I'm very guilty of letting things sit over a year and then all of a sudden it gets shoved either into the back of the refrigerator or on a shelf somewhere way in the back and I get it out and I'm like, whoa. I
Right,
have
yep.
cleaned out quite a bit of vaccines that were outdated and that was due to my poor refrigerator management. I
Right, yep.
didn't.
So at the end of the calving season, just throw it away so you don't have to worry about throwing it away or accidentally using it. So.
Yeah, don't be. Yeah, because I. Obviously, if something's expired, it's not as effective. It's important to use like with the colostrum replacer or the supplement, those lose their effectiveness over time, right?
Right.
There's an expiration and you can use it, but don't expect to have the results versus compared to using something that was not expired.
Yep.
So
Calves are gonna be, or hopefully continue to be, extremely valuable, right? So, that's another take home of these calving schools is, we're trying to just increase the number of live calves on the place, so you have more calves to sell. And hopefully increase your revenue coming in at weaning time. So we can all look forward to hopefully selling more calves. And these were just a couple tips that people had wanted to learn. And so we're trying to help give people that experience in order to get through calving season.
that is a great way to end this episode, Taylor. Thank you. That's a really great summary right there. Before we wrap up, though, completely, we want to share just a few upcoming things that SDSU Extension is doing. I will kick it off. We are hosting some beef quality assurance trainings here this winter, but at any time, if you want to know more about beef quality assurance, please reach out to me again, Robin Salverson. And I can help you with that. Taylor, you had some things you wanted to mention.
Yeah, so as we get ready for calving, we also have livestock events going on. Plenty of stock shows going out or going on right now that several people in Extension will be out and about. So take a look for us. If you have questions you want to send our way, we might be there. There's also some farming events going on. So there's some crop hour things that you can brush up on, some of those things that when the snow is flying, you don't necessarily think of. I know cattle don't necessarily always give us a break, but just some other things on the Extension website that you can find, as well as so this is Cattle HQ podcast, but there's also a Cattle HQ live webinar series that is once a month, and that you can register for and either listen live or watch recordings to just catch up on some more cattle information.
So if you go to our extension website, SDSU extension website and click on events, you can see all of everything that's going on with SDSU extension. So
And mostly all of those are free.
yeah, absolutely. Yes. So once again, this has been Cattle HQ brought to you by SDSU extension headquarters for all things beef cattle. Visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information. Until our next episode, happy calving.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Cattle HQ, brought to you by SDSU Extension, headquarters for all things beef. We invite you to visit extension.sdstate.edu for the latest beef information, as well as subscribe to the show on Spotify. You will also find show notes and resources from today's episode. Until next time, remember, success is not a goal, it's a byproduct.